In the Triad of North Carolina, where Emerald Hills roll, the Sharp Loan Team is on a mission to achieve housing goals. With St. Patrick's Day coming, it's a time of luck and cheer. Let's seize the moment and make your dream home appear. Like a pot of gold at Rainbow's End, your perfect house awaits. You'll need a pre-approval to have better rates. In the fields of Winston-Salem, where four-leaf clovers grow, we'll guide you through the process, keeping you in the know. This March, when it's warmer and luck and magic fill the air, your home sweet home is waiting for your tender, loving care. So don't delay, reach out today and let's embark on this quest with luck and expertise. We'll ensure you're truly blessed. Together, we'll find your treasure at Rainbow's shining end. With the Sharp Loan Team, you'll always have a friend.
This is the Triad Podcast Network.
I'm Algernon Cash, and you're locked in. The 2024 primary election season has officially come to an end. I know that's so disappointing for all of you, especially all of you political junkies like myself, but we are now officially in the general election season. So the starting gun has went off, and we'll see some big races that are happening over the next few months as we march to November. But as always, I like to look a little, I like to look backwards and look at the primary election season and break down some of the key races. And for that conversation, I've invited John Locke Foundation senior political analyst Mitch Kokob back to the show to share his expert insight and some of his reaction to what we just witnessed in the primary election season. Mitch, thank you for locking in, man. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me, Algernon. Another busy primary season once again.
I think they're all busy. No matter, we always say this is the most important election of your lifetime, but I think that we got to come up with a new tagline, Mitch, because that's certainly overused. But this was a really busy election season for North Carolina, and I know we'll get into it here in a moment, but North Carolina is being watched by the whole country right now. So we're on the big stage as we get ready to go into the general election season. I guess to just sort of kick it off, I mean, we'll start top of the ticket with the Trump primary. Obviously, it was down to Trump and Nikki Haley. Personally, I was really thinking that former Governor Haley or Ambassador Haley was going to have a little better showing here in North Carolina. I think she got somewhere around 23% of the vote. I was thinking maybe she'd get at least 30 or slightly above. What was your reaction to that particular race?
I think probably one of the reasons why the percentage was where it was because it had gotten so clear by the time of Super Tuesday, and North Carolina's primary was on Super Tuesday with the others, that Donald Trump was going to win. So I think even some people who might have been inclined to throw their support to Nikki Haley basically were deciding, you know, it's over by now. Let's just go ahead and vote with the winner. Or some of the people who might have been Haley supporters just didn't show up, because we know the turnout was pretty low for this primary, especially low on the Democratic side, but even on the Republican side, it was somewhat low. And I think that's likely because in both parties, the presidential race seemed to be pretty much over by the time it got to North Carolina. We know that on the Democratic side, there wasn't even an alternative to Joe Biden on the ticket, though 13% of the people voted no preference. So they at least got their protest vote in there about Joe Biden. But on the Republican side, I think you probably would have seen a closer contest if people had said there's a chance that she can win. But basically everything leading up to that Tuesday was saying it's Donald Trump's in the bag. And so people who were voting for Nikki Haley really supported her and wanted to see her win, but I don't think many of them actually thought she would win.
You know, you just hit on a point. I was talking with someone this morning. I've actually got a piece that I'm working on right now for the Carolina Journal highlighting the runoff that's happening in the 6th District race, which we'll get to in a moment. And so I was talking to someone here local to the Triad, and they were also talking about the turnout was low, or at least it felt like it was low. Felt the same way to me when I went out to vote for primary day as well. I mean, do you think amongst the Trump supporters and, you know, now what we call the MAGA base or MAGA wing of the Republican Party, was turnout high there and then maybe just lower amongst moderates? Or do you feel like it was just low all across the board?
I'm not certain, but I would say it's probably across the board, because of whether you were a supporter of Donald Trump or not, if you thought he pretty much had that election in the bag, that was less of an incentive to turn out to vote. Now, there were still plenty of important races to vote for. And another one that I'm sure that we'll get into is the big open governor's race. But even there, I think people on both sides of the aisle pretty much expected that the candidate who was seen as the front runner was going to win. And that's, in fact, what turned out. So if you pretty much think that the presidential nomination is decided and you think that the governor's race is probably pretty well wrapped up, that really reduces the incentive for a lot of voters to head out there. Now, still, there were plenty of people who voted and voted on all the other big elections. But for those who would only vote in a presidential race or only vote for president and governor, the idea of turning out to vote in a race that you already think is decided becomes less. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is one of the things that helps with our perception of turnout being lower is the fact that we have so much early voting in North Carolina. So on election day, people who headed out to the polls, almost 700,000 of their peers had already cast their ballots. Hmm. And so that helps lead to the idea that perhaps there's lower turnout. But we did, in fact, when you look at the numbers, had lower turnout than we had in the last comparable election.
Well, another race where I think maybe turnout had some type of a direct consequence is that 6th district race. Obviously, that was an extremely crowded field. Bone Hines, Christian Castelli, Addison McDowell, Mark Walker, Jay Wagner. I mean, I think the only person wasn't running in that race was my mom and sister. So I think everybody was asking for the Republican nomination in that particular race. You know, personally, for me, Mitch, I really thought Walker would have performed a lot better than he did. I mean, obviously, he had the name recognition, the ID, because he'd been in Congress before. Also thought Mayor Wagner would have did a little better than he did. I think he didn't break 10%. But ultimately, it came down to a runoff, or it will be a runoff between Addison McDowell as well as Mark Walker. I mean, do you think that that was a race that was affected by low turnout as well?
It probably was affected to some degree by low turnout. And I think it also was affected by the fact that you had so many candidates. You named almost all of them and all had some sort of base of support. Mark Walker, of course, has been a former congressman. I think one thing that hurt him was that he had had some endorsements that were lined up, and then people came back later and said, no, I didn't actually endorse him. I think that might have hurt him a little bit. Of course, for Addison McDowell, who was the person who finished highest in that race with 26% of the vote, he had Donald Trump's backing. And so in a Republican primary, in a Republican party that does have a very large, as you call it, MAGA wing or strong Trump supporters, once he has said he has a candidate in mind, that person tends to get some support. In this case, it was 26% of the vote. Then he will be up against Mark Walker. And I think the big challenge for both of these candidates in the runoff, which is going to be scheduled May 14th, with early voting ahead of that date, is not only do you have to get your own supporters back to the polls for the May 14th election when they aren't expecting to otherwise be voting, but then you have to try to convince people who supported the other candidates who finished third, fourth, fifth, and beyond that, A, they should support you now that they've lost the first time around, and that they should go back to the polls. That's going to be a challenge, I think, for both Addison McDowell and Mark Walker. I think other interesting things in that, Christian Castelli obviously ran for this same seat the last time when it was a very Democratic seat and Kathy Manning won the race. And then also Bo Hines, who had had the Trump endorsement the last time around in a different district, the 13th district. That was enough to help him win the nomination from the Republican Party, but he lost in the general election. And I think that his loss in 2022, plus the fact that he had once again moved to another district, I think hurt him with voters. He ended up only with 14% of the vote, even though he had support from Club for Growth, as he had last time around.
And I think Addison also had support from Club for Growth as well. It looks like they were sort of spreading the money around, if I'm correct about that. I know he obviously had the Trump endorsement, despite the fact that I saw many campaign ads coming out of the Walker camp with Walker and Trump together. And obviously in the ad, but he didn't necessarily have the endorsement. I think that race really turned out interesting. I also think that Jay Wagner, Mayor Wagner out of High Point, and Mark Walker have similar politics. So I really believe that maybe Wagner getting in the race didn't do Walker any favor. He might have had a better showing had Wagner not been in the race. But I know Christian Castelli has already came out this morning and endorsed Addison. So what are your thoughts about that? I mean, does it feel like maybe Addison is already consolidating the other parts of the field that he didn't get in the on primary day?
That's entirely possible. I think one of the things that we will learn once we get the runoff election is how much of this was a referendum on Mark Walker and his previous service in Congress and people's willingness to bring him back, and how much of this is a case of rallying around the Trump candidate. I think one of the things that we find in some of these races is that because you have to get 30% plus one votes to win a primary outright, many of these candidates were banking on getting just past that 30% threshold, and that worked in some districts. It did not work in this one. And so now it's the case of getting your voters back to the polls in May when they're not expecting to go to the polls for much of anything else. And beyond that, trying to convince the other people that you are the second best candidate for them. With Castelli aligning up behind Addison McDowell, that's a big boost for him, because if all of the Castelli voters went to Addison McDowell and they all showed up, that would give him a clear advantage. But of course, not as many people are going to turn out on May 14th. The only other things besides the congressional race in your neck of the woods that people on the Republican side would vote for were runoffs for lieutenant governor and state auditor. And those are elections that are not necessarily going to fire up a ton of people to get out there and vote.
It's time to get serious about your financial future. It's never too early, but it could be too late to get started. And that's oftentimes the hardest part, getting started. How much do I save? Where do I invest? Do I save for college or retirement? How much for each? And who do I talk to about it all? Okay, we'll keep things simple for now and help you answer the last one. We recommend you begin with a local financial advisor. And that's Jennifer Johnson of Three Magnolias Financial Advisors. She'll sit down with you for a complimentary introductory consultation and go over all of your questions. Get started on the path to achieving your financial goals. Visit 3magnoliasfinancialadvisors.com or call 336-701-1600. Get comfortable with your financial future. 3 Magnolias Financial Advisors, retirement, financial planning, and investments. Securities offered through Cetera Advisor Networks, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Three Magnolias Financial Advisors. Three Magnolias Financial Advisors and Cetera Advisor Networks are not affiliated. Cetera is under separate ownership from any other named entity.
I mean, what's the future of Walker's political career? I mean, if he doesn't pull this runoff out, you know, he ran for the Senate nomination, he lost, jumped in the governor's race, got out the governor's race to run in the congressional race. If he doesn't win in May, is this make or break for him at this point? Or
I wouldn't say that it's over, but I think he would certainly have to step back and reflect and say, what do I need to do between now and the next time I run, if I do want to run? I mean, he might decide that it's over if he doesn't win this, but I don't think that he necessarily would have to. I do think he would need to step back and reflect and say, is there something else I need to do to get into the good graces of the electorate before I run again? Because basically, his run for U.S. Senate and his run this time around have been on the back of his congressional record, saying, look, I had a distinguished record in Congress. The only reason I had to leave was because the districts were redrawn and the district was not going to allow me to win. So if he doesn't win this time around, I think he'll have to step back and say, is there something else that I'll need to do to win the support from the voters and not just say, hey, I had a great record in Congress, send me back?
If you're just now joining us, thank you for locking in. My name is Algernon Cash. The other voice that you hear with me today is Mitch Coca, who is the John Locke Foundation senior political analyst. And we are basically just breaking down the 2024 primary election season and just giving you a little bit of expert insight on why we experienced the outcomes that we did. Another race, Mitch, that was somewhat, I guess, predetermined was the governor's primary. Obviously, Josh Stein didn't have any competition, so we knew he was moving forward. All the polls indicated that Mark Robinson was going to do exceptionally well, even though I did notice that Dale Falwell, who was polling around 8-9%, I mean, single digits going into the primary election season, I mean, he did get around 19% of the vote. So, I mean, despite the fact that he lost, he did outperform what people thought he would do. And then I think Bill Graham might have picked up another 11 or 12% of the vote as well. I mean, if you're Mark Robinson, I mean, are these numbers concerning? I mean, going into the general election, I mean, obviously you've got a large group of Republicans out there that are just not behind you.
I'm not sure that he's terribly concerned about the outcome of the Republican primary. He basically got almost 2/3 of the vote, with 65% for him, 19% for Falwell, 16% for Bill Graham. It's a resounding victory, despite the fact that he didn't take part in any debates, didn't really engage with either of the other two candidates at all. Probably, if you are someone working with the Mark Robinson campaign, the biggest thing at this point is how does his support, strong support among the Republican base, translate into the general election? Are people going to look at his story, his background, his outsider status and say, yeah, that's what we need for Raleigh? Or are they going to look at some of the controversial statements that he's made and say, you know, I can't accept that. I'm going to have to go to the other side. And that's where some of these races come down to. You have people who are Democrats, you know, they call them the yellow dog Democrats, who are going to vote for a Democrat, whoever it is. You have people who are going to vote for the Republican, whoever it is. Those people will get out there, and to some extent, they're going to cancel each other out. It's the people in the middle who will decide this race, the ones who can be swayed one way or another, and it really depends on the candidate. And I think this campaign is going to be focused quite a bit on Mark Robinson, the type of candidate he is, the types of things that he has said and done. I doubt we're going to hear a ton from Josh Stein about what his priorities are for the next 4 years. He's mainly going to be saying, look, you can't elect Robinson. He's too dangerous or outlandish. And I think Robinson's going to be spending much of his time talking about his personal story and his outsider status and wanting to clean up Raleigh. And so I think a lot of this election will come down to what people think about Mark Robinson and whether it's good or bad. If enough of them think it's good, then he has a good shot. If enough of them are turned off by his messages and the way that he goes about the things that he says, then that bodes well for Stein.
You know, actually on primary election night and even the following morning, you know, as I scanned a lot of the major news outlets, the cable news outlets, they were talking about this particular race with Robinson. I mean, it was on every outlet, including the night of the primary vote. It's funny you use the word dangerous, because I've already started seeing ads coming out against Mark Robinson from national groups saying that Robinson is too dangerous for North Carolina. That's actually the word they use. Robinson made a guest. Well, I don't know if he knew he made this appearance, but he made an appearance on The Daily Show about 3 days ago. So this is obviously a big race that's going to get a lot of national attention. How does that play out in terms of the general election? I mean, could you see a lot of outside money coming into North Carolina in support of Josh Stein?
We are 100% going to see a ton of outside money coming in. I think a lot of it will support Josh Stein, but I think there will also be outside money supporting Mark Robinson, because both parties see an open governor's seat in North Carolina as a huge prize. We know that the governor not only plays the role as the top executive at state government, but also plays a major role, the way things are written now, in appointing the State Board of Elections and in appointing people to a lot of other important offices in North Carolina that have an impact beyond this state. So both parties are going to see this as a major prize. I think in the general election, it's going to be interesting to see how the people at the top of the ticket affect everything else, because you have Trump And you have Robinson, who appeal in many respects to about the same type of voter. There's not a 100% crossover between Trump and Robinson supporters, but there's a pretty big overlap. The Venn diagram looks an awful lot more like a circle than it does with some other candidates. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Donald Trump has won North Carolina's electoral votes twice, but he didn't blow anyone out. And the last time around, when he beat Joe Biden, it was less than 75,000 votes, about a point and a half in percentage terms. And can he do that again this time around? And if so, is Robinson right there with him? And if so, in both of those cases, does that help the candidates down the ballot on the Republican side? On the flip side, if people don't go with Trump this time around, and if people associate Robinson with Trump and vote the other way, going with Stein and with Biden, does that hurt Republicans down the ballot? I would think that it would, because there are a lot of these races that will kind of get lost in the shuffle, and people will just say, all right, I voted this way, I'm just going to keep voting this way. They can't vote straight ticket anymore. That the Republican General Assembly got rid of that. But people might be inclined, if they've thought at the top of the ticket, to vote for a D or vote for an R, to continue voting that way down the ballot.
You know, Del Falwell, during the primary election season, he said the fastest growing party is the unaffiliated party. I don't know how well that messaging works for you in a primary when you're trying to get the Republican nomination, but I do strongly agree with him. I do think unaffiliated voters, independent voters, are going to have a big, big impact on this year here in North Carolina, whether it be for president or obviously for the governor's race as well. You've already alluded to this, shifting into the Council of State. We do have a runoff between Hal Weatherman and Jim O'Neill. Jim is the current Forsyth County district attorney. He has ran unsuccessfully for attorney general twice now. But it does look like on this, at least this last performance, he did a little better and got a little closer. Hal Weatherman actually won that race, but didn't get the 30%. So they are in a runoff as well. What are you hearing about that particular race? What's the mood out there amongst the people?
Haven't heard a whole lot about this race other than people looking at the results and seeing that it was interesting that Weatherman and O'Neill were the top two. Raleigh insiders, I think, thought that perhaps there would be a better shot for the people who have been serving as legislators in Raleigh. But Deanna Ballard, the former state senator from up in the western part of the state, finished third. She was less than a percentage point behind O'Neill. And then Jeffrey Elmore, who is also a state rep, both of them, Ballard and Elmore, known for their work on education, both of them fell short. So I think people were interested to see that it was Weatherman and O'Neill who ended up in the top two. Heading into this, since there were so many candidates, my thought was the person who has the best geographic base is probably going to be helped. And to me, that was O'Neill, because a lot of the people who were in this race were big fish in small ponds. You had the sheriff of Rockingham County. You had former state legislators in smaller counties. And Forsyth County was the county that was the largest among the candidates. And Jim O'Neill, having won countywide, had that base. Plus, he has at least a little bit of name recognition from those runs for state attorney general. Hal Weatherman has good contacts with the party. He, of course, worked for Dan Forrest, was very influential in Dan Forrest's campaigns. And so a lot of the people who are activists who head out to the polls for a primary knew of Hal Weatherman and supported him. Plus, he had been in the race fairly early on and got a good head start. So I think that the key for both of them is going to be similar to what we talked about earlier in any other runoff, and that is get your own people out there and then try to convince the people who voted for the other candidates that you are the second best choice and that they should still go out and vote for you. You mentioned that Hal Weatherman finished first, but he was at less than 20%. You need 30% plus one to get into to win outright. He had less than 20%, which means even though he finished first, 80% of the people who voted for someone else. That means both he and Jim O'Neill have a lot of work to do.
When the weather warms up, so does the real estate market. Sounds obvious, right? It's true. Spring typically means more home sales. But how will the current interest rates affect people's decisions? What about inventory?
Is it high or low? And does that benefit the buyer or the seller? And how do those factors take into account a certain price point or area of the triad? Now it's not so obvious, is it? That's why you should turn to the Ginther Group to make sense of it all. You need someone you can rely on to assess your situation, read the data and trends, and steer you in the right direction. Interest rates, inventory, even new construction. There are so many factors that impact our local market. And you should get your information from the folks right here in our backyard. Contact Blake Ginther and the Ginther Group today, 336-283-8689, or visit theginthergroup.com. Buying, selling, investing, or just learning, whatever you need, start now. And like me, you can become a Ginther Group client for life.
Oh, that's a great point. I was really watching that race. I know Jim pretty well just because he's here in my backyard. I thought he would perform well considering the fact he had ran for state attorney general twice. When you run statewide that way, I mean, that's a great exercise for the race that he was in. I also thought Hal would have done extremely well because of just the work that he did with the Forest campaign and his work in helping Dan to get elected. Now, Hal does have some experience with runoffs. That's how Dan originally got into that seat. He had a runoff against Dale Falwell many years ago. So it'll be interesting to see how, you know, what tricks Hal might have up his sleeve to try to pull this thing out. There were a couple of other surprising Council of State races as well. Myself and a lot of people that I talked to were really shocked by the Catherine Truitt loss. I honestly had to go look up her opponent. I didn't even know who she was. And I discovered that maybe I think at some point she gave a speech to the Wake County school board that ended up going viral. That's really how people started discovering her. And almost similar to the Robinson story in terms of how he became lieutenant governor. What was your reaction to that race? I mean, a lot of people I talked to have been really shocked by the outcome there.
I was surprised as well, but was less surprised after I had a chance to speak the next day before a Republican group in Moore County. It was the Moore County Republican Women, and almost everyone in that room was happy about that result, which signaled to me that among the activists, among the people who really drive the train for a lot of the primary election, there was a lot of concern about Catherine Truitt and a lot of interest in Michelle Mora, who had run for Wake County School Board and has spoken before the Wake County School Board in the past, has also homeschooled her kids, which makes her really an outsider. Mm-hmm. And in the general election, it's going to be a clear contrast, just as the Mark Robinson, Josh Stein gubernatorial race is going to be a clear contrast. The race for superintendent will also be a clear contrast when you have an outsider homeschool mother who's been very critical of the public schools, especially since COVID, Michelle Morrow on the Republican side, against Mo Green, who was the superintendent of the Guilford County schools. Before that, was a high-ranking official in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools. It's really going to be an insider versus an outsider. And as I said, I was shocked about Catherine Truitt, but only until I talked to some actually hardcore Republican activists who had heard Morrow's message, really liked it, and were concerned about Truitt and her actions in office. I think one of the things that she is also paying for, meaning Catherine Truitt, is that regardless of what she did, she was the superintendent in office as we were dealing with a lot of the COVID issues. Mm. And so I think a lot of people looked and said, we don't like what the public schools were doing at that time. Who was the superintendent? Oh, Truitt. So they were automatically giving her a red X when they thought about her as running for office again.
Yeah, Mo Green also was the head of the Z. Smith Reynolds Foundation here. Yes. In my backyard as well. So I know him really well. I think he'll be somebody to keep a close eye on in this upcoming race. But I really like the way you sort of highlighted the contrast between Mo Green and Michelle Morrow. So, I mean, that's going to be an interesting race to watch as well. Another one that I was surprised by, maybe you weren't, the commissioner of labor race. I really thought John Hardister, who is currently the House Majority Whip in the General Assembly, I thought he ran a really strong race, raised a lot of money, had every endorsement from every county you could imagine. But in the end, you know, Luke Farley edged him out in that race as well, which felt like to me was, again, you know, primarily led by this sort of grassroots activist part of the Republican Party. But what were your thoughts?
Yeah, you're exactly right on that. That was another case where I had been to a few Republican events, not many, but a few, speaking to various groups. And also, we had our conservative leadership conference, and Luke Farley was there at all of them. I think every time I was there, he was there. He had his supporters there. I didn't see as much of John Hardister. He had, as you mentioned, good endorsements. I don't think he sat back and didn't campaign, but he wasn't campaigning in the same way that Luke Farley did. And I'm not sure how much of a role this played, but the one huge endorsement that Farley had that Hardister did not was our previous labor commissioner, the elevator queen, Cherie Berry. She had spoken very favorably about Luke Farley, endorsed him, talked about how she thought he was the right candidate for the job. And of course, if you look at the preparation and background for this job, he is a person who has worked as a labor law attorney. So, I mean, he does have the background. John Hardister, of course, has had a great legislative experience, but we saw in a number of races this time around, especially on the Republican side, almost exclusively on the Republican side, that legislative experience didn't really translate well into success in either a congressional or statewide run. The one lone exception being Tim Moore, the House Speaker, running for Congress and winning big in his primary. But other legislators or recent legislators running for either a council of state office or for a congressional seat, on the Republican side, they didn't turn out too well.
No, I think you're spot on. I would tell my audience, make sure you keep an eye on John Hardister. I don't think this is the end for him by any stretch of the imagination. Very young guy, has done exceptionally well moving into the leadership in the House and the General Assembly. Took a big gamble vacating his seat to be able to run this race for labor commissioner. So I would not be shocked if this is maybe the beginning of something else for him. You'll probably see him again in the next 4 years or so. You know, Mitch, as I wind down on my time here, I'm almost certain that I missed something either at the Council of State level or maybe within the General Assembly. Anything else that maybe my audience should know about or be watching as we move into the general election season?
Well, there is one other Council of State runoff. So folks in your neck of the woods will probably have the chance to vote in that runoff for Congress, also in the runoff for Lieutenant Governor, and a chance to vote in the runoff for State Auditor. And of course, this was the job that was held for a number of years by Beth Wood. She, because of some personal issues, had to resign. Governor Cooper appointed her replacement, Jessica Holmes, who is the Democratic candidate in that race. On the Republican side, there will be a runoff between a fellow named Jack Clark and another guy named Dave Bolick. Jack Clark, a lot of people didn't really know his name, but it turns out he was the only CPA in this race. And a lot of people said, hey, this is an auditor. An auditor ought to be a CPA. I should vote for the CPA. So that, I think, helped him a bit. Dave Bolick, his name has mainly been seen as the head of the Board of Trustees at UNC Chapel Hill. He's got his name in the news quite a bit for that. I'm not sure how that translates into the state auditor's campaign, but certainly both of those guys are in that race. And then those are probably the biggies for Council of State. I would mention just a handful of legislative races just because they were fairly significant. On the Republican side, a couple of incumbents in the state House lost. One of them, Kevin Crutchfield out in Cabarrus County, there's been a big fight up for leadership of the Cabarrus County Republican Party, and Crutchfield ended up being on the losing side of that fight. And then also probably the biggest shock on the Republican side in the legislature was George Cleveland, longtime state representative in Onslow County. He's in his 80s. He's been in the General Assembly for 20 years, got beat by a 21-year-old ECU student. A very motivated young man named Wyatt Gable, who decided he wanted to get into an election and really stumped. And in an election that only had less than 5,000 total votes, Gable beat George Cleveland to win. On the Democratic side, to mention very quickly, there were some primaries that were launched against Democrats who have worked at times with Republicans, and they had mixed success. On the Senate side, Mike Woodard of Durham County, who would occasionally vote with Republicans, not a lot, but occasionally, he got knocked out in his primary. And then on the House side, Michael Ray from the northeastern part of the state, who voted on a number of occasions with Republicans, he was knocked out by a fellow named Rodney Pierce, who's actually a plaintiff in a federal redistricting lawsuit. But then there were a couple of other Democrats who were targeted in primaries who were able to win. You in your backyard will know Cecil Brockman from Guilford County, who was able to withstand a challenge against him. Shelley Willingham was another House candidate who was able to win, and he won fairly handily in his election. So I think that was interesting to see. Democrats who were angry about Democrats working with Republicans had mixed success in taking out some candidates in primaries.
And from my audience, because I know a lot of my audience members are in the triad, it's worth mentioning that Senator Joyce Krawczyk has also retired from the Senate. So she was not on the ballot, but she is handing the mantle, so to say, to Dana Bryson Cook, actually, who actually is a former school board member. And she is now looking to become the next senator in that particular district. Real fast, Mitch, because you mentioned something about the auditor's race. You know, maybe somebody that's a CPA should win that race. You also mentioned the fact that Luke Farley actually worked in, you know, he was a labor attorney and he's running for commissioner of labor. One of the things that I've been looking at with these council of state races, do we have too many elected positions on the council of state? I mean, if you think about the treasurer's race, we just want somebody in that role that can manage the money. When you think about the auditor's race, we want somebody in there that's smart and knows how to audit agencies. I mean, should we be looking more at the governor appointing these positions versus having all these elected positions on the Council of State?
Well, my employer, the John Locke Foundation, took a look at exactly this topic about 10, 12 years ago now. And yes, we thought that there are too many elected positions on the Council of State, because when you get to it, a lot of times the people who are ending up running for these offices are ones who are tied to the industry that's going to be regulated. And so there could be some concerns on that front. The main challenge that you face is that whether people are going to spend a lot of time looking into these elections or not, they like being able to have the say. I mean, taking a vote away from voters is a difficult thing. And so I think a lot of people would say that even if they don't spend much time looking at what the ag commissioner does or the superintendent or the auditor or the treasurer, they still want to have the final say. And so, that's something that can be difficult to overcome. One more race to mention really quickly, because it was an upset. There are four statewide judicial races that are coming up this fall. Two of them had primaries, and in one of those primaries, a sitting Court of Appeals judge named Hunter Murphy lost a Republican primary. So a fellow named Chris Freeman, who's a district judge, will be running in his place. Those are big races. We know that there's one seat on the state Supreme Court. Justice Allison Riggs won her primary. She will be facing Appeals Court Judge Jefferson Griffin in the fall.
Mitch, as always, man, you've done a great job. This is the reason why you're on my list of regular contributors here at the Locked In program. I'm certain you and I'll be together more as the general election season starts to heat up. But I really thank you for taking a moment just to lock in today and sort of give us your insight and your perspective on what's happening with these races. And as always, I want to thank my audience for locking in as well. Make sure you stay tuned to WTOB, because every Sunday morning, that is where the Locked In show broadcasts. But if you happen to miss me there, hopefully you're subscribed to my podcast, and you can download that on Pandora, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your favorite podcast, you can lock in there. And as always, y'all stay locked in.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode on the Triad Podcast Network. Our mission is simple: provide information, advice, and stories about the people and places that make the North Carolina Triad such a great place to be. You can find us by searching Triad Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much wherever you like to listen. If you like what you heard and want to support the show and those that contribute, we would truly appreciate a rating and review on your favorite podcast app. It helps spread the word along, as do your shares on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Triad Podcast. To get in touch with us, simply email info@triadpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.
This is the Triad Podcast Network.